And you have to adjust yourself on a daily basis. And usually all those self-supported runs, when I'm running from the hotel to the hotel, I'm booking the hotel on a morning of running or the day before. And then I run to the hotel, and sometimes it's difficult because sometimes you can find the hotel, like, and you know, you have some specific budget, which how much you can spend on a hotel. So sometimes the hotel is 40 kilometers away, sometimes it's 70, 80 kilometers away. And that's what you have to pass. And when you run through places like, you know, Vietnam or the top of the Scotland, then you don't have choice. When the hotel is 80 kilometers away, you have to run 80 kilometers away, no matter on the weather. And, you know, often there is no place to hide when there is a heavy rain or, you know, like in Scotland, snow and strong wind. You just have to keep running because you have to get to another place. You have to get to another hotel, and you have to keep running.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Tomas Drybala. In April of 2019, he set a goal to make a total of 5 million steps through the islands of the Philippines, Malaysia, and Indonesia. It took him 101 days, and he completed the challenge, ending up on the island of Taiwan. 3 weeks later, he started a running adventure in Southeast Asia to run 11,000 kilometers from Hanoi in Vietnam to Denpasar in Bali. He completed that. He's done several other self-supported ultramarathon or ultra-distance multi-day runs, and starting this September of 2022, he is going to start running the circumference of the Earth for a total of 40,075 kilometers. I enjoyed hearing his stories. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Tomas Drybala. Well, thank you. Thank you a lot for joining me. I appreciate it. I'm excited to hear your story.
Thank you so much for, you know, for having me on the podcast.
So Tomas, how did you get started as a runner? I mean,
The journey started for me many years ago, but about, I don't know even exactly, but about 20 years ago. But for the first 15 or 16 years, I was actually running like twice a week, half an hour a day, just to clear my mind after the work, just to, you know, feel a bit better. But since beginning of 2016, I increased my trainings daily, and I did this actually mainly for the mental health purpose. I never compete with people. I was never running the race, I wasn't interested a lot about this, you know, physical aspect of running, but I was always interested in the mental health aspect of running, and that's where my full focus was always. So, you know, I started more intensively 5-6 times per week, above 1 hour, sometimes even 3 hours a day, since beginning of 2016. And in March 2019, I started training really, really intensively, like a few hours a day, 5-6 times per week, and, you know, increasing speed and increasing steps, increasing how many miles I was running. That was with the intentions to start some big challenges. But in March 2018, I didn't know yet what kind of the challenges it will be. I know that it will be something connected with the running. And then in November 2018, I think it was November, there was a guy, English guy, Ross, who swam around the Great Britain. He spent like 158 in the sea. And I was like, you know, oh, if that guy could spend nearly 200 days in the sea, I can do some crazy challenges.
Yeah, so and then I didn't hear about this. He swam completely around the isle of...
Yes, he spent, I think, 158 days. He just go to the water and just swam around the entire island and then just get out of the water. So, you know, that was crazy. So I said, okay, I can also run some big distances. And then in April 2019, I started my first challenge.
Wow. So what was kind of the motivation? I mean, you said you started running kind of for your mental health, but you know, what was the motivation to say, I need to have a big challenge in my life?
Yeah. You know, I always struggle with a focus in my life. I always struggle with anxiety, with stress and overwhelm. I'm now 44 years old. And when that bigger running journey started for me, it was something around when I was around 37 years old, when I started increasing my time spending on running. And it was a time when, you know, it was most of the difficult time in my life, when I wasn't living with my two sons any longer. I also lost the business in this time. So I want to improve my mental health. I wanted to make some big changes in my life. I realized that I don't have to be stressed. I don't have to be worried all the time. I don't have to feel anxiety all the time. And I was just looking for the solutions. I was looking how I can do it. And because, you know, I wasn't running up to that time. I wasn't running a lot, but I was running. It was actually the only sport which I was doing from time to time, and it was helping me. So now I just focus more on running, and I just started pushing my limits. But it was mainly for the mental health, to feel better, to reduce stress in my life.
And it got you through that. I mean, you had some difficult times that got you through that. So, people would say, well, yeah, you could get that kind of stress relief with just running a couple of miles a day. You wouldn't have to do anything more than that. What was it that said, you know, I mean, you saw that guy who swam around Britain. What was it that drew you to saying, I want to do something that's like that. I want to do something that's more than a little bit of running.
At the beginning, it was my sons, because I learned that when I was, you know, trying to change my life and make some mental health improvements, I learned that all my anxieties, stresses, overwhelms were connected to some traumatic experiences which I did have when I was a kid. And when I was learning more about this, when I was reading the book, reading articles, listening to, you know, to podcasts, etc., I learned that if we experience traumas in our life and we don't heal those traumatic experiences, then we will actually pass those traumatic experiences on the next generation, on our kids or our sons and our daughters. And I started talking with my family, with my parents, with my grandparents, and I discovered that actually the anxieties, stresses, overwhelms are like for the generations in my family. It's just going from one generation to another. So I was trying to looking for the solutions to inspire my sons to also keep chasing those dreams, to, you know, fighting for the life which they want to have. I said, okay, I know wherever I pass with my anxieties already on my sons, I pass it. I cannot change it, but I can show them the way how they can heal from it and how they can, you know, not be affected for this. I just said, okay, the cycle is ending with me. And I was looking for the solutions. I didn't know where this will take me, but I just wanted to push my limits. And, you know, when I started running first 5 kilometers, it was great. Then 10 kilometers, it was even better. So I was keeping increasing. I didn't know it's going to go up to thousands, running of thousands of kilometers.
Yes.
But I just kept increasing. And that's how it all started.
Well, there are a lot of runners out there who would, you know, say, yes, I know exactly how that it starts with just, you know, for runners who run races, it's, oh, I'll do a 5K. And then you get around other runners and then it's like, well, I'll do 10K and I'll do a half marathon. And it's very easy to just keep, but running tends to be that way. It tends to get people is like, oh, what can it, I think it attracts people who want to see what they see what's possible for them.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you, but you kind of took that to a big level. I mean, you weren't doing races. So what was your first kind of big challenge? Cause I know you do like self-supported runs. That's kind of been the thing that you've been, what was your first kind of self-supported run and how did you come up with that idea?
Yes. You know, I keep saying to people that one day I go out from home to for a run to make some mental health improvements and things goes crazy. My first big challenge. So I started like really intensive trainings in March 2018 and then in, 18. And then in April 2019, I started my first big challenge. And the first big one was to make 5 million steps in 100 days. I was late by one day. So I did it in 101 days, but it's not that I'm like, seriously disappointed because of this. I started this challenge and I didn't actually know what to expect. It was my first big challenge. Probably if I will know how hard it will be, then probably I will never start it. So it's good I didn't know what to expect. But when I completed this challenge, I knew that I can train for anything in my life. Because I started from making around 25,000 steps a day. And I ended, by the end of the challenge, I was doing a bit even over 100,000 steps a day, which was, you know, like 14 hours of heavy exercise. So when I completed this challenge, when I finally make this 5 million steps in 101 days, I knew that I can train for whatever I can, wherever I want in life, that I can actually learn whatever I want in life. And then I did have a 3 weeks break and I started the next challenge, which was running 11,000 kilometers again, just on my own, just with a backpack, just running, you know, from the hotel to the hotel. I was in completely new territory because both of those challenges I did in Asia. So the weather was really hot. Sometimes it was really difficult to find even the water along the way. And, you know, many occasions to find the food, to find the accommodation. It was really challenging. But I did it. I managed.
So where in Asia did you run?
So, you know, the first challenge, 5 million steps, I fly to Bali and started from Bali. Then I did another two Indonesian islands, Nusa Penida and Gili Islands. And that was simply, I just go to one beautiful location in one island. Then I was running around this beautiful location. And then I moved to another beautiful location and running around another beautiful location. Then the next island was the Borneo, on the Malaysian side of the Borneo Island. Lots of snakes, lots of signs that the crocodiles, you know, to be careful about the crocodiles, lots of other danger animals, but beautiful scenery, palm tree plantations, rainforest, absolutely amazing, stunning locations. Then there was Philippines, three islands in Philippines, and I completed 5 million steps in Taiwan. Then the next big challenge, that 11,000 kilometers, I started from Hanoi in Vietnam, running through Cambodia, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore. And when I passed half of the distance, 5,500 kilometers, the COVID-19 happened. It was March 2020. I managed to escape in last boat from Singapore to Sumatra in Indonesia, but I couldn't run any longer. I was supposed to run through Sumatra, Java, and Bali, another 5,500 kilometers. But Indonesia was never under the full lockdown, but you cannot move from one village to another village. So I got stuck in a small village next to the jungle for the first 3 weeks, it was quite hard because people was really attacking me on the street because they thought that I brought the COVID-19 to them. The police asked me to stay in the hotel room. There was only two people speaking in English, two police officers in the entire village. But, you know, I realized that, okay, we didn't know in March 2020 what's going to happen and how long it's going to take. So at some point, I realized that I get stuck actually in Indonesia for probably a few months. And I started running again. I choose one road through the village and through the jungle. I was just running, waving to all the people around, smiling. And they accepted me eventually. So I completed running 11,000 kilometers. Half of the distance, I just ran through the ocean coast. And remaining half of the distance, I divided on 268 half marathons. And I was running locally 2 to 5 half marathons. And eventually, I finished the entire challenge.
Wow. So how long were you stuck there?
So I after 3 months, I could actually come back to London. But then I was like 3/4 to the challenge. So I said, okay, I want to finish the entire challenge. And altogether, I spent 6 months in Sumatra. And then in August 2020, I completed the second challenge. And in September 2020, London.
You're back to
then,
London.
You know, the COVID was up and down, continuing with lockdowns. So I couldn't start anything else. I was preparing for the next challenge. Now I'm running actually 2,500 kilometers through the United Kingdom and through Poland. But this is, you know, mainly the preparation for the biggest challenge in my life, to run that 40,000 kilometers, 25,000 miles.
Yes, you're running the circumference of the earth. So are you doing it in different, are you running in each continent as well?
So it is a massive challenge. So this one is divided on 40 months, so around 3.5 years. I'll be running through 4 continents and 27 countries. So I'm starting from United States, from New York, running down the country to through the ocean coast to Florida, turning towards the Mexican border, running through the Mexican border on the other side to San Diego, and then turning up through the ocean coast to Seattle. Then I have a 1 month break. We are moving all the equipment to Hong Kong, and I'm starting the Asian part of the challenge. Running, so through United States, it will be something around 10,000 kilometers, so roughly around 6,000 miles. Mm-hmm. Asia is 11,000 kilometers, so nearly 7,000 miles. I'm starting from Hong Kong, running through China, Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, and again, 3 islands in Indonesia, Sumatra, Java, and Bali. So that part which I didn't complete last time. Then again, I have a 1 month break. We're moving all the equipment to Kuwait, starting running U-shape through the Arabian Peninsula. That's the shortest distance, around 6,000 miles. So 6,000 kilometers, so nearly 4,000 miles. But it's going to be probably the hardest part because of the temperature and the lots of big distance I have through the sands, through the Sahara, through the empty quarter. So I'm passing here Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, Emirates, Oman. I'm not going to Yemen because there's still a war zone in Yemen. Running more through Saudi Arabia, passing through the Red Sea on the other side to Africa, and running a bit 600 kilometers through Africa to Cairo in Egypt. And then another month break and starting the European part. So starting from Greece, running through the Mediterranean Sea and then the Atlantic Ocean coast, passing all the European countries. That's the longest distance, is a 13,000 kilometers. Hopefully by the end of 2025, I'll be back to London and finish the entire challenge.
That's ambition. So I have a couple of things. Do you have a support team that is going to be helping you as well?
I'm starting on my own from New York, just with a backpack. So the same way, like up to now, I did all other challenges, and I will be running from hotel to hotel. And by the end of October, beginning of November, the support team will join me. So I will be almost in Florida at that time, and the support team will join me. And then we'll have a caravan. We have the production team who record a documentary movie. That the documentary movie will be divided on 4 seasons, so the same as I'm running. So United States, America, Asia, Arabia, and Europe. Then it will be a bit easier for me, because I don't have to carry on the backpack any longer with my laptop and some cloths inside. And I can actually sleep along the way in any place. We can stop with a caravan, so then it's going to be easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So, but you've done your other runs self-supported. Everything up until now, you've not had a crew with you. So
no. Yeah. So I have some experience doing it.
I'm thinking as a runner. I'm thinking about, a self-supported run for those kinds of distances. What can you take? I mean, and how much, how much stuff do you carry with you?
It's really not a lot. I'm running probably around 8-9 kilo backpack. So I'm counting on the food and drink and water. I'm counting on the shops along mm-hmm. the way of my running road, and sometimes not really working that way. It was really hard to find the shops when I was running through Vietnam, and I did have a bit over 3,000 kilometers when I was running 11,000 kilometers, which I have to pass through Vietnam. The challenging part was also when I started the challenge in Scotland, on the top of the Scotland, and I was running through the Highland, and the distance between the shops sometimes was 100 kilometers. And I was simply knocking to the doors to people and asking for water, asking for food, and asking for the accommodation. And no one ever refused to me. People was really helpful and helping me. I know with my backpack, I'm after the finishing run on a daily basis. When I get to the hotel, I just have to open my laptop and do my work. So I carry on my laptop. I can carry on some notebooks, some pens, some toothbrush, and just literally a couple of clothes, like another shorts, another t-shirt, another socks. You can't put a lot of stuff. I learn to live for the past few years. I learned to live with absolute minimum with me, and it's actually the most happiest years in my life, except for the time when my son was born. it's not a lot what you can take with you.
Yes, and so do you have a map and plan? I would imagine you try to plan, but if it's 100 kilometers between towns,
so
be difficult to plan for.
Yeah, so usually, when I now I will be starting from running from United States, and actually I plan the entire road already, and I know exactly through which towns and cities and villages through which I will pass, and on which day I will pass, and how many kilometers I will pass on every single day. But that's the theory. The practice looks slightly different, and you have to adjust yourself on a daily basis. And usually all those self-supported runs, when I'm running from the hotel to the hotel, I'm booking the hotel on a morning of running or the day before. And then I ran to the hotel, and sometimes it's difficult because sometimes you can find the hotel, like, and you know, you have some specific budget, which, how much you can spend on a hotel. So sometimes the hotel is 40 kilometers away, sometimes it's 70, 80 kilometers away. And that's what you have to pass. And when you run through places like, you know, Vietnam or the top of the Scotland, then you don't have choice. When the hotel is 80 kilometers away, you have to run 80 kilometers away, no matter on the weather. And, you know, often there is no place to hide when there is a heavy rain or, you know, like in Scotland, snow and strong wind. You just have to keep running because you have to get to another place. You have to get to another hotel, and you have to keep running.
that's true. Now you have mentioned that you are you practice what you call mindful running.
Yes.
So what is to talk a little bit about that, because that's sure. That's to me a very very interesting topic.
Yes, it's actually started for me when I was running those two challenges through Asia, because I never heard before about the mindful running, active meditation, or the state of flow. But you know, when I was running through Asia, I live in London. I'm from Poland originally, and in both those countries, we don't have really lots of snakes, and we don't see them on a daily basis. When I was running through Asia, that was normal, and you know, I was running through small villages, little roads through the jungles, through the fields, and the snakes were absolutely everywhere. And because I experienced, as I said at the beginning, when I was a little kid, I was experiencing some childhood traumas, and my mind was always dwelling on the past or worrying about the future, and I was almost never in the present moment. So a few times when I was running through Asia, a few times I almost stepped on the snake because I just haven't seen those snakes in front of me. I just noticed them in the last second. So I was worried about my life because, you know, when I was running through the little road in through the jungle, if the snake will bite me and if that's the danger snake, I may not get help on time. So there was no any more space for dwelling on the past or worrying about the future. And I did have to focus on the road in front of me to see what is in front of me. So I was focusing on noticing snakes. And at some point I started running like crazy distances, like 70, 80, 90, 100 kilometers a day. And not only this, I repeat this, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 days, a second week. And of course it was heavy physical exercise. But I was fine. I was enjoying this. I was, you know, it was kind of the effortless. And not only this, after the finishing running, I usually start really early, like 5, 6 in the morning, because I wanted to avoid that, you know, heavy sun. So I usually finish by about 12, 1, 2 o'clock. I usually finish running. And then I was able to rest for 1 hour or so, and then I was able to sit down to my laptop and work for the next few hours. And it was like completely new experience to me. So I get curious why I'm, you know, so much open-minded and clear and fresh in my mind and physically and mentally. And I learned that I started searching, and I learned that I'm actually getting into the state of flow. And then I get curious how I'm doing this, how this is happening. And then I learned that I'm actually practicing mindful running and active meditation. So when I learned that I do this, I just started, you know, creating those conditions for flow purposefully. So I purposefully started practicing mindful running and active meditation. And an absolutely crazy thing started happening in my life. I, you know, passed 5 million steps in 101 days. I passed 11,000 kilometers. I started teaching at universities in Thailand, just running with a backpack from one university to another university when I was running those 11,000 kilometers challenge. And I talked at 20 universities in Thailand, and I was already teaching about the flow, mindful running, and active meditation. I get booked for 34 universities in Malaysia and Singapore, but I couldn't speak at them because the COVID-19 happened. So, you know, then I started research with a scientist in United Kingdom, and I become the ambassador for the Wave Trust Charity organization, which is creating the policies for the countries around the globe, and preventing childhood traumas experiences. So, you know, and then I was introduced to another big organizations, and, you know, out of this, I created the coaching program, online coaching program. I wrote the entire book about the subject, and now I'm running I'm preparing myself to run 40,000 kilometers. And, you know, I credit for all of these things. I'm crediting mindful running and active meditation, practicing mindful running and active meditation.
If you are a business owner or an entrepreneur, you know all about stress. Business owners and ultramarathon runners both have to have a strong mindset, but the difference is that business owners and entrepreneurs tend to ignore the warning signs of stress and burnout. When you run an ultramarathon, you push your body to the limit, and you have to manage your energy in an ultramarathon to be successful and make it to the finish line. But when you run an ultramarathon, you get to rest and recover when your race is over. If you're a business owner, you tend to feel like you're in a race with no finish line. In ultramarathon, they call those the last man standing, and you, the strongest, survive. If you're a business owner and you're not careful, you could be one of those who ends up blowing up and not finishing, breaking your body. Business owners tend to keep pushing until something breaks. As a mindset coach, I help business owners manage their energy, de-stress their life, and be profitable as well as healthy and successful. If you are in that situation, contact me at ultramindsetpodcast.run. That's ultramindsetpodcast.run for a free 25-minute mindset reset. I can help you keep from burning yourself out, managing your energy for success.
All of these things, I'm crediting mindful running and active meditation, practicing mindful running and active meditation.
So that's interesting how your story of how you discovered that. So you ran quite a lot of your running at the beginning then was not the mindful running. You said that even though you were running for your mental health.
Yes.
But you were still focusing on, you still spent your time, your mind was either in the past or worried about the future. That describes, I think, a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of us, we tend to live that way.
Yes.
And you were doing, and so even though running helped you with the anxiety, you didn't start off there with that mindful running. It was the snakes that helped you get to
I mean,
that.
The snakes was the point when I started achieving that macro flows. But if we're talking about the flow, it's worth to mention that, you know, I was running some crazy distances, but you can actually achieve flow when you run 5 kilometers, when you run 10 kilometers on those most basic runs. You don't have to be a runner at all, because, you know, you can do any sort of the sport. It can be cycling, swimming, but you can also play the chess or guitar or cook or dancing, or, you know, you can achieve flow when you're having sex, when you're writing, when you're reading, when you're listening to music. So actually anyone on the earth, any human on the earth, doesn't matter what you do, you can achieve the flow. But we have those micro flows, which is all of this which I just said, which we can achieve them on a daily basis. And we can have those macro flows, and the macro flows are also associated with the peak performance, with you know, running some of those crazy distances, challenges, or, you know, compete. But you can also compete for 1 kilometer, and you can achieve flow. You know, to achieve the flow, you have to create a certain conditions to achieve the flow. And you can actually achieve this on a daily basis. So, you know, coming back to all those anxieties, I can very simple explain how all of those anxieties are holding inside ourselves. That's something what I was struggling for many years. In most cases, this is connected, of course, not always, but in most cases, this is connected to the childhood traumatic experiences. But, you know, when we're talking about the childhood traumatic experiences, this is not only, I don't know, experiencing the war or having a difficult family situation, or, you know, being neglected or experiencing the death of parents or caregivers, or I don't know, any sort of the domestic violence, etc. The traumatic experiences can be such as simple as being questioned by your teacher at the age of 8, and you answer not on subject, and your teacher tell you something, and then your classmates started laughing on you. Or, for example, you said your true but unpopular opinion on popular subject, and then your peer rejected you and say that, you know, it's not how it is. And then you may have traumatic experiences because, and it may result that for the rest of your life, you are blocking yourself from speaking in public, for example. So, you know, I just want to give the example. So how this is working actually is because our mind doesn't recognize the difference between the reality and the visualization. What that means is that if you see the lion in front of you, or if something triggers the traumatic experience from your childhood, event which is happening today triggers that traumatic experience which you have in your childhood, which was pushed on the back of your mind, then when those kind of events happen, your brain doesn't recognize the difference between the lion in front of you and this event which is triggered by traumatic experiences. And your brain responds exactly this, in the same way. So your brain sending a signal to your body, it's a flight or fight response, and your brain is sending signal to your body about the danger in front of you. You know later that this is lion, but that's your thoughts. But before this is happening, your brain is sending the signal to your body, and your body tightens because your body is ready to respond, is ready either to run away or to fight with the danger which you have in front of you. When body receives the signal, the body is sending signal back to the brain. And then the brain gets the signal from the body and sends the signal back to the body again. And then that, in this case, we can get into the vicious cycle. You know, we can break the cycle of the tightness of the body. We can break the cycle simply by going for a run or talking with someone, or, I don't know, listening to podcasts, listening to music, reading the book. But if you didn't heal those traumatic experiences, then this you know, signal, this traumatic experience will come back to you again and again and again. I keep explaining to the people that for the most of my life, I felt like I have a crunched fist inside my stomach, the fist which was holding me. And that was actually that signal, which was that anxiety, which was always either stronger or less stronger, but it was always existing in my body. And you know, when I started getting to the state of flow, when you get to the state of flow, your prefrontal cortex, the front of the brain, is resetting, and when the is shutting down, and then your nervous system is resetting, and when the nervous system is resetting, all those anxieties, stresses, and overwhelms are disappearing. You are like starting fresh, starting new. So, you know, when I started practicing mindful running and active meditation, and when I started getting regularly into the state of flow, I was, you know, purposefully creating conditions for the state of flow. And I was purposefully putting myself into the present moment, focusing on what I have in front of me and on living in the present moment. And then all those anxieties and stresses and overwhelms was disappearing. And, you know, that's how I managed to eventually resolve those anxieties. And for the past few years, this is not coming back to me.
Wow. And that's it's interesting. I had never thought of this. I mean, it makes sense that your mind doesn't assign some sort of a larger degree of threat, and so that the feeling of of having, you know, when you're in grade school, you know, in grade school children, they make fun of each other all the time. I got made fun of and you know, I got made fun of when I was a child. And I think that's a very typical experience for most people. And I remember that I can recall those feelings of how that felt. And to realize that my physical response, and even the memory of those instances, my physical response is the same as if I, you know, you talk about snakes. I mean, most trail runners, I mean, sticks and snakes look very similar when you're when you're on the trail. And so, you know, so we're always looking out for snakes. So when I almost step on a snake, that my body's response is the same for both of those. Whereas, you know, in my mind, or you know, when I think about it, it's like, oh, somebody making fun of me is not nearly as serious as almost getting bitten by a poisonous snake. But in reality, my body responds the same way to both of those things.
Exactly.
And even the memory. I mean, I can remember the times I've almost stepped on a snake. I mean, but those that physical response is the same. And so,
you know, we tend to think, well, you know, because I'm along the way of my running road, those 40,000 kilometers, one of the things which we will do is that we will be building trauma-informed communities, because most of the people, when you talk about the traumas, most of the people think, oh, that's wrong. I'm not really affected by this. I was living in a normal, normal society in a normal family. But, you know, the thing is that there is a huge misunderstanding here, because, you know, all the statistics says that traumatic experiences from our childhood touches 80% of the population. And I read some of the statistics that which are saying that it may touches even like 97% of the population. So it's actually something what have a huge effects on us. Since we are, you know, little kids, but we just don't know about this. And when we know about this, when we are aware, there are really very simple exercises which can help us to resolve this. But, you know, that simple exercises needs to be repeated for the period of time to have a real effect on us.
Yes, and I can, you know, it's those things we tend to deny. I mean, we tend to minimize those, and the society tells you that. Well, you know, in the United States, there's a saying. They say sticks and stones will break your bones, but words won't hurt you.
Yeah,
and you know, the experience contradicts that. You know, the people's words do. I mean, it's because you internalize that. And it most of us wouldn't say that those experiences, would say, well, that wasn't a traumatic experience. That was just, you know, that was just something that happened. It wasn't that big of a deal. But in our bodies will tell us differently. And you're saying that, and I would say most of us would probably have some of those times in our lives that have affected us.
Yeah.
You talked about flow, and I wanted to say I kind of know, you know, what I think flow is, but for those people who may have never heard about flow states, talk a little about what is it the difference between being in flow versus not being in flow? What does a flow state feel like?
Sure. So, you know, for me, there's a lot of definitions of the flow. I mean, all the definitions are around the same thing, but for me, the flow is the state of mind in which we are fully focused on performance activity. So when we are in the flow, the statistic says that our productivity increases even by 500%. The creative thinking increases even by 700%. The learning skills increases even by 490%. And the problem-solving skills increases even by 430%. So the flow, to simple explain this, you know, as I said at the beginning, what is happening in the flow is when you are in the flow, the prefrontal cortex is shooting down, and your entire nervous system is restarting, resetting. Time is calculated in the prefrontal cortex, so when it's shooting down, your brain can't separate any longer past from the present and from the future. And you are getting into the deep now. So that's those moments when the sometimes, you know, the time flies when you spend 5 hours on the activity, but it goes, you look at the, but it goes like a 5 minutes. Then you look at the watch and you see it wasn't 5 minutes. It was actually 5 hours. When the prefrontal cortex shooting down, the sense of self, so actually what we are thinking and how we perceive ourselves is resetting as well. We stopping self-criticizing, we're stopping doubting ourselves. We are literally getting out of our way. The risk-taking is going really high. And, you know, we are starting doing a really brave thing. This is what was happening to me when I started running all of those long distances, because I didn't doubt any, you know, about my capabilities to run those long distances. So, and so this is the difference between being in the state of flow and not being in the state of flow. Usually, you know, when you are not in the state of flow, we can maybe compare this to the time when you are you're having a difficulties to I don't know, start writing the some kind of the article, and let me explain from the different way. So how to create the conditions for flow when you run, so people can understand this properly. So if you are a runner, if you want to create the conditions for flow, then you need to create the set for yourself a clear goals. So what can be your clear goal? If you're going for a run and you are saying to yourself today, oh, I'm going for one-hour run and I will see how long I can run and I will see how I will feel and maybe I will run longer, maybe shorter, I will see how I'm feeling about this run. This is not a flow-inducing run because the goal is abstract. But when you're going for a run and you're saying to yourself, I will be running certain distance, so let's say 10 kilometers, or I want to run at the certain pace, this could be a flow-inducing goals because the concrete is because the goal is concrete, because you have a clear goals. So that's the number one condition. Number two condition is that we need to create a challenge skill balance. What that means, the sweet spot for the challenge skill balance is 4%. So what that means is that if you're running 10 kilometers a day and you set yourself to run 40 kilometers on one day, then more likely this run will overwhelm you and you will become anxious about the run and you won't be able to achieve the flow. On the other hand, if you're going for a run and you usually run 40 kilometers a day and then you want to run only 20 kilometers a day, then you get bored because it's not really difficult for you to run this distance and you cannot create these conditions for flow again. So your challenge needs to be a bit higher than your skills. You have to be passionate about the activity which you are doing. That's the number one. And the second is you have to also, it needs to be connected with some sort of the effort. So now, so you need to have that challenge skill balance. And the third condition is the feedback, interior and exterior feedback, which you get when you run. So to explain this, you know, on some of the weeks, we feel really strong and we can run, let's say, 40 kilometers a day. On other week, we are not so much strong and we are feel confident to run only 20 kilometers a week. So we have to adjust our goals. And if you, for example, racing and then adjusting your goal and getting a feedback can be, for example, you are on the race and you see the runner in front of you, you are getting the feedback from your body that I'm feeling really strong today. I can push the piece. You're getting the exterior feedback, for example, from your coach who is shouting to you, you can do it, you can run faster. And then you set a clear goal for yourself to pass the person in front of you. And then you pass this person in front of you, you're getting again the feedback. You feel, okay, I'm really strong today. I pass that person, I can pass another person which is in front of me. And you're setting the another goal for yourself, and then you're passing another person. So all of this is a flow-inducing runs. There is no any magic formula for flow. There is no guarantee that if you create those conditions that you achieve flow. But when you create those conditions, there is a high possibility that you can get into the state of flow.
Okay. So people talk about flow state. Do you have like a meditation practice that you do as well that kind of helps correspond with your running to help you get into flow?
Sure. For each person, there is something different what will get them into the state of flow. So everyone have to just, do this practice and try. But there is one main thing when it comes to the flow. Flow follows focus, and you can get into the state of flow only when your mind exists in the present moment, in a deep here and deep now. So all the meditations which are helping you to get into the present moment awareness, those are the meditations which are helping you to create conditions for flow. So I can give you some examples of very simple mindful activities, active meditation and mindful running activities, which can get you into the, help you get into the state of flow, because that will create the present moment awareness. For example, very simple one, the way how I was focusing on snakes when I was running through Asia, you can, for example, choose the color from your environment and focus on this color. It shouldn't be color which is too often in the environment. So, like a brown, green, or blue, and those are really color populars, because blue, you have a sky, the blue, grass, trees, buildings, which naturally they are in those three colors. So what I always say to people, to pick up the orange color, because it's the color which raises awareness. And each time when you run, focus on noticing that orange color. Just look around you and focus on noticing that orange color. And when you notice this orange color, say to yourself, orange. If you run in the environment when there is no lots of orange, then pick up the similar colors like yellow or amber. And each time when you notice those colors, just say to yourself, yellow or amber. Don't expect yourself to see those colors. Don't push yourself to see those colors, but just do it naturally. Whenever you notice that color, just acknowledge this color and say it to yourself. And you'll be surprised, even if you run through the environment which you run on a daily basis, you'll be shocked in how many places you can see that orange color in, shops, in buildings, in bricks, in boats, in bikes, in cars, in chairs, inside the restaurants, wherever you're passing along the way. And this is a very simple exercise to start practicing mindfulness on your runs and to start noticing and to start getting yourself into the present moment, which will start creating the conditions for flow. The other really simple example is breath, that you can focus on your breath. So I'm always, regulating my breath to the stride. For me, the speed is not important at all. I'm running the distance. I'm setting my goals for the distance. And my stride is usually three on three. And that's also how I'm taking the breath. So, on a three steps, so let's say left, right, left, I'm taking the breath in. On another three steps, right, left, right, I'm giving the breath out. And I'm regulating, so I'm focusing on regulating my breath to my stride, and I'm counting my breaths, for example, one, two, three, one, two, three. And, you know, when you run like this, you can, again, easily get into the present moment awareness and hopefully start creating conditions for flow and achieve flow.
Yes. And there are a lot of other, you know, there are a lot of things like that you can, but I think what you're saying is the focusing on the present instead of letting all those cascade of thoughts that, you know, I call them like a swarm. I mean, it's like a yeah. thought swarm. It's they just swarm in my head and they distract you from, I mean, you're not, your mind is not where your body is.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's important here to know and to acknowledge and to understand that, you know, our thoughts, this is our biology. This is what is happening in our mind. That's why, that's, you know, what the mind is created for. Every human have between 40 to 70,000 thoughts a day. So, you know, when you start practicing mindfulness, meditation, any sort of the meditation, then, you know, people tend to quit very quickly when they start meditation because they're saying, oh, I cannot focus. Each time when I focus, you know, I'm thinking about what I need to buy today. I'm doing the shopping list. I think I know what I need to respond to the email, to whom I need to call. This is not working for me. But actually, it's the opposite. It just means that it's really working for you because we have those 40 to 70,000 thoughts a day, no matter if we know about them or not, because this is happening in our subconscious mind. So those thoughts are existing there. And when you're starting meditation, when you're starting focusing on the present moment awareness, then you are bringing a conscious awareness to those thoughts. You know, at the beginning is a bit overwhelming because you are starting hearing what you didn't hear before, and that may put you back. But it actually means that you are, that the meditation is working for you. And, you know, with the time that's focusing muscle, you just strengthen this focusing muscle and it will be stronger. So, you know, you may manage to meditate at the beginning only for 2 minutes. When you have those thoughts, when you notice those thoughts, just accept them. Don't say, oh gosh, I'm thinking again. Just say to yourself, thinking, and accept that this is natural. This is just the event in your mind. You don't have to respond to this event. Just accept it, acknowledge, accept it, and just bring your attention back to that present moment. So, you know, the principles for the traditional sitting meditations and the principle for the active meditation is quite similar, but the active meditation is simple, is easier to implement because you know, you don't have to sit down still for a certain time, you know. And the active meditation, you can, it doesn't need to be running. You can implement to any form of the physical activity. It can be implemented to brushing your teeth, to, you know, preparing the coffee, to preparing the food, to even writing the email, to taking the shower, to walking to the shop. You don't have to practice meditation for half an hour or 20 minutes or 15 minutes. Start with a 3 minutes meditation, you know, start with the brushing your teeth. So you will notice that it's really hard to focus on for 2 minutes on brushing your teeth, on, you know, flavor of the past or how the brush is touching your teeth. If you feel pain, if you feel sweet, if you feel mint, you know, just try to focus for wherever you can for 2 minutes by plan those activities, and you can implement active meditation 5 times per day for 3 minutes. And this will help helping you and noticing, you know, the difference. And if you notice the difference, then you start building interesting motivation, because if you feel good, you want to feel good again. Then you will start practicing a bit longer and a bit longer and a bit longer. So don't push yourself to, you know, to practice for, I don't know, even 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Start with 2, 3 minutes.
And that's what I think a lot of people, and I got for most of a lot of my life, every time I'd try to do the traditional meditation, I got hung up on that because I felt like, well, I can't do this. It's not working. And, the active meditation is a good, that is a good strategy, and breaking it up into smaller chunks, you'd have could have success and get the benefits from it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I appreciate you being here, Tomas. Tell people how to get a hold of you. And I mean, you have coaching programs, you have a book. Where can people connect with you? And also, you're running around the world. You're raising support. You have a charity as well. So talk a little bit about where people can connect with you.
Sure. So the best way, I'm the most active on from all social medias. I'm the most active on Instagram. But as I said, when I will run the main challenge, we have the production team with us. So then actually all my social media will be really active. So it's easy to find me. And all the informations are included on my website. So I have a coaching program to help people practicing mindful running and active meditation and create conditions for flow. I wrote the book, which is going to be published on the 10th of January 2023, so when I will run through United States. We have the community, so people can join actually the community and have access to all the meditations, workshops. So all these informations are included on my website. And along the way of my running road, we will be fundraising. The first thing, we will be creating trauma-informed communities. So we will have a lot of workshops and speeches along the way. Just in the United States, we want to have about 80 workshops and speeches along the way of my running route. But altogether, in all those countries, will be over 400 speaking engagements. And this is to build trauma-informed communities. Around 100 of those events will be philanthropic events for the UNICEF. Remaining 300 are connected to my work when I teach people about the mindful running and active meditation. And we're raising funds for UNICEF, for kids in Ukraine, Venezuela, Philippines, and Yemen. At current time, we're raising for kids in Ukraine. Later, we'll change this for another areas in the world. And people can join me simply by virtually or running along the way with me. You can find them on Instagram. You can find Runners for UNICEF and just join the movement, run, donate, and share with the world the information. So I will be very grateful if the runners would join me along the way and help to other kids around the globe through the UNICEF work.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate you being here. Before I let you go, I have a tradition. I call these the bridge questions, questions I ask people before they leave the podcast.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I'm not afraid.
So the first question is, you do a lot of self-supported run. What is your most important piece of gear that you have to have?
Laptop. I know it's probably the weirdest answer, but definitely laptop, because I have to work. I can organize everything along the way. I can knock to the doors and say to people what I'm doing and ask if they will be able to help me with something. I cannot exist without the laptop, because I won't be able to learn. And actually, I create the whole system, the whole work which I created about around the laptop and my mobile, and this is only thing which I'm using for my work. So I cannot exist with this one.
I like that. That's the second. I've had another person who said it was their iPhone, and so right. It's like that was a. But usually it's not. It's that's a good one. It's the first time I've heard laptop has been the most special piece of gear. So in all of your adventures and all of your being out on the. In all kinds of various places, what is the strangest thing that you've seen?
The thing which shocked me the most, maybe this way, was Philippines. Because when you're thinking about the Philippines, you think about the beautiful country, about the beautiful beaches, beautiful water and palm trees, etc. But Filipinas shocked me. The kids in Filipinas, because the gap between the rich and poor people was massive. When I got to Filipinas and started running through Manila, through the capital city of Filipinas, after 3 days, I left Filipinas because I couldn't, mentally, I couldn't handle this. Seeing kids sleeping under the bridges on the carton boards, and then next to them, huge, beautiful skyscrapers and extremely rich people. It was the most shocking thing. And this was actually what pushed me later, maybe not pushed, but inspired me later to approach UNICEF and to work with UNICEF to raise the funds and to help to kids from the different areas in around the globe.
Yeah, yeah, that would be hard to reconcile there.
Yes.
So, okay, the third question, what is the phrase or the words that describe your philosophy of life?
I believe that each of us have the same chance to build the life we are proud to live, regardless of our past experiences. And this is actually the message which I'm getting to the people, and I'm running with the message around the globe.
Great, great. I love that. Thank you a lot, Tomas, for taking the time to be here. I've really enjoyed talking with you, and hope to follow you on your journey, your trip around the world.
Great, thank you so much. Thank you very much for having me today.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, please take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. And if you enjoy most of the episodes, please tell your friends. That's the best compliment you can give. I truly enjoy being able to spend time here with you each week, and I appreciate that you take the time to listen. If you have any comments, questions, or stories that you'd like to share, go to ultramindsetpodcast.run and you can leave a written or a voice message. You can also find the show notes for this episode and more at the same link, ultramindsetpodcast.run. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life, and a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.